Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Craig Burley here with you in the studio to look back on the second leg semi between Liverpool and Villarreal. Liverpool are through to the Champions League final, but there was a major scare in the first half when they went two goals down without reply. They turned it around in the second, scoring three, and Luis Diaz's introduction into the game really did turn things around. Liverpool progressed 5-2 on aggregate, and the quadruple is very much still on. We have a whole host of people here tonight to talk about what we saw. We have Frank Leboeuf, Ali Moreno and Don Hutchison as well. But let's start with you, Craig. I mean, congratulations to Liverpool, but Villarreal did warn that they would be different at home, and we did see that.
Completely different side. That was the Villarreal that we know and we've seen at times in La Liga this season, particularly at home. But Liverpool, you know, well, the architects of their own downfall in some sense, because, you know, Klopp talked about it after the players talked. I've heard Van Dijk been interviewed, Mo Salah been interviewed. They all said we knew it was coming. We were warned, we were prepared, we weren't complacent, but we just didn't perform as a team. And, you know, with Kapui making great runs, with Lo Celso coming off the right-hand side causing problems, Estupiñán down the left side. And when those crosses were coming in, that back four was shaking, particularly the fullbacks who got exposed on a couple of occasions. So, yeah, it was a fascinating first 45 minutes, and fair play to Villarreal.
And some fascinating insight after that first half of action, Don, as to what Jurgen Klopp had to say to his players.
Yeah, very interesting, Kay. That he got asked a question after the game, what did you say at half-time? And he said, you know, he asked his analyst guy to show one passage of play in the first half that was good, so you can then give him a little bit of confidence and show them at half time. And the analyst guy just turned around and went, "There's not one. We were terrible." And I think, bizarrely, I think the thing that done it for Villarreal was scoring that second goal just before half time. Even though, of course, you want to score the goal and you want to go into half time with a 2-0 lead. I think if they had gone in at one, Liverpool's team talk might have been slightly different. They might not have put Diaz on. They might not have been as hectic and as sort of desperate. But I've got to say, credit Villarreal. I thought the first opening part of the game, first 20 minutes, they score inside three. They put you on the back foot. Intimidating little atmosphere. The crowd played their part for sure. Liverpool's possession stats in the first half was their lowest since 2019. They couldn't keep the ball. Thiago was giving it away. They had nothing going at the top end of the pitch, and they needed half-time like you wouldn't believe. So much better in the second half, and the obvious substitution was Diaz, and he had a massive role to play in the game. He was incredible second half.
It really did make the difference, didn't he, Ale? Luis Diaz and his introduction.
Of course he did, and there was life to Liverpool that they did not have in the first half. You just see a player, when you give him the ball, he's going to be direct. He's going to go challenge defenders. He's going to go take chances. He's going to create for himself. He's going to create for others. And you were not seeing any of that from Liverpool. And to the point that Don was just making, not only were the turnovers happening for Thiago, they were happening for Naby Keita as well. So they did not have any sort of possession of the ball in that first half to then be able to expose 1v1 situations in transition. The second half was far different. Of course, the introduction of Luis Diaz plays a part into that. I thought he was a difference maker, but I also think that it plays a part the posture of Villarreal, who decided to sit back. They looked like the Villarreal from the first leg rather than the first half. Now, I understand that it's physically impossible to maintain that pace that they had in the first 45 minutes. But you can keep it for 60 minutes, you can keep it for 70, you gotta keep it for as long as you possibly can, because you had Liverpool running all over the place, you had Liverpool down, you had Liverpool afraid and scared and they couldn't come out, you had Liverpool in your hands. And while I know, I concede that Liverpool got better and improved in the second half, I also think think that it has to do with the fact that Villarreal sat deeper and deeper and deeper, and then Liverpool just became too much. Luis Diaz was excellent, and then after that, Liverpool took over.
But with the utmost respect to Villarreal, Frank, was it always going to be too big a mountain to climb to overcome them, especially this Liverpool, knowing the quality that they have?
Yeah, but I mean, you have to believe that playing 11 against 11, that maybe you can climb that mountain and be successful. So that you have to believe on what you're going to be capable of doing. And for 45 minutes, I think they did more than good. They were absolutely fantastic. But there is two pictures that I want to see from the when I want to remember from the first half. Is at the end of the first half, we see a picture of Coquelin and Lo Celso sweating like crazy. Where I saw at the same time, just after, a picture of Van Dijk and Fabinho not sweating at all. And I say, well, that's two different, you know, pictures of one team giving everything, physically giving 100% and maybe too much. It's why maybe they decided to drop in the second half, as Ali just mentioned. And another team, we did nothing, just being completely passive and starting to play in the second half. That was appalling from Liverpool. It's why maybe, it's the reason why maybe Villarreal was so good. But I think credit to Villarreal players. They gave what they had to give and have been sanctioned in the second half because of the physical aspect of the game, where maybe they gave too much.
I tell you who was sweating, the analysis people at Liverpool, after their gaffer had asked them for a pause. It's a great line, isn't it? You know, because Jurgen Klopp said, as Don mentioned, he said it was so obvious where we were poor in every facet. And when he turned to the analysis people, he said, find me something good. They must have been thinking, what a job this is. You're not going to find something good for half time. But I think this, and Klopp said, you know, nothing. Nothing. So he can go into the dressing room and say, hey, guys. But I think in some ways this is good for Liverpool, because they've been on such a good run, and still are. They've been playing great. They've been brushing most teams aside. But they've come through this unscathed after that first half. And I think for a manager, that's a good reminder to his players that even when you are the quality of some of these Liverpool players, a performance like that, the chances are you're going to get punished. They're not good enough. Even them, those players are not good enough to play like that and win against the real top teams. Only because Villarreal are seventh in the league. Another team would have put them to bed, probably. A Real Madrid in the final, if it's Real Madrid or Man City, they play like that for 45, it's probably 4 or 5 nil. So I think this is a good reminder that even when they're 20%, 30% under their usual, they're probably going to get punished. So sometimes it's good to get that reminder. Second half, passed the ball, kept possession, got behind the lines, got behind the Villarreal midfield, and then they got turned at that back four, and that was the old Liverpool that we knew. But can they be as bad in the second half as they were in the first, Kate? And the answer was a categoric no.
So has that ended up then being a wake-up call, do you think, Don? Because they wouldn't be let off so easily if it was Man City or Real Madrid, would they?
Exactly that. And Pep and Carlo Ancelotti, after the game tomorrow night, will do their analysis on Liverpool and they'll watch a million games, but they'll watch that first half that they played against Villarreal, and they'll realise, if they already didn't know it before, that Liverpool's fullbacks are brilliant going forward, but they are a little bit of a... or they are susceptible defensively. We saw that with Trent. For the second goal, for sure. But it's one of them, as Craig said, you know, especially when the elite teams and you're playing in the Champions League at an elite level in a final, if you're off it, you know, you can be punished and you might not come back from 2-0 down. So, massive wake-up call.
As for Villarreal, Ali, in this one, what can they take away from it? Pride after this?
I suppose so. If you believe in moral victories, yeah, go ahead and do that. I just think, really, where this game was, it was more of a wasted opportunity for Villarreal to further the suffering, and this is the word that Unai Emery used leading up to this game, suffering of Liverpool in this second leg. And I think there was a chance here to continue to play the way that they were playing in the first half, up until their legs went. And once their legs went, then you hang on for as long as you possibly can. You make some substitutions. You try to keep Liverpool down. So to me, the halftime could not have come at a worse time for Villarreal. Villarreal were in full control, and they were outdoing Liverpool in the things that they usually do well. They were doing to Liverpool what Liverpool usually does to other teams. They were squeezing the life out of Liverpool. Halftime comes, and I have to imagine that that gave some time for the worst thing that could happen, and that is for Unai Emery to think a little bit, to think to the point of overthinking and say, you know what's going to be a good idea? Since we cannot keep this up, we're just going to sit back and we're going to look like we looked in the first leg. And then we're going to catch them on the counter. And the more that you invited Liverpool and you gave freedom to Thiago Alcantara to move the ball and you gave freedom to some of the other players to move the ball, and then Luis Diaz brings a different energy, you allow Liverpool to have a life that they did not have. Halftime came at the worst time possible for Villarreal, and I think the fans will be happy in terms of, look, we really gave a good account of ourselves. We are going to be proud of Villarreal. I look at it from the perspective of an opportunity wasted because you had Liverpool on the ropes and you let them slip away.
Just going back to halftime and a change for Liverpool, and going back to Luis Diaz, Frank, coming on for Diogo Jota, did he just let his coach know that he should be starting in the final?
I'm not sure I understood your question, Kay. I'm sorry.
Should Luis Diaz start in the final after his performance today?
You don't know that if it would have been a good, very good idea for Luis Diaz to start. I mean, the fact that he came on and speed up the game, pace up the game, and change the rhythm of everybody and created dangers because of the Villarreal players were a little bit tired as well at the same time. You don't know what would have happened, you know, if he would have started. That's a question it's impossible to answer. Maybe Diego Jota tired the players. Maybe Luis Diaz came on and changed the pace because of the fake rhythm of the Liverpool team. I think it's also a lesson for Liverpool who can get out of that game, is that, in fact, if Liverpool doesn't play 100% with a high pressure, with a high rhythm, they're not the best team. They're not the best team in the world. And Luis Diaz showed the way to start again and to be better as Liverpool is normally, because it's the pace that they need to be different than other teams and to be successful. I don't know if Luis Diaz playing at the beginning would have changed something at the fake rhythm that they had for 45 minutes.
I don't think today's game has changed anything. I think Jurgen Klopp already knows that his best front three at the moment is is Diaz, Mane and Salah. I think it was an opportunity to give Diaz a rest, being 2-0 up. I think it was an opportunity to play Diego Jota with Villarreal playing a higher line and a pressing game to run in behind, which he likes to do, and come from late and score goals. But it just wasn't happening for Liverpool. So, I think Klopp already, I think if it was a Champions League final, I think if that had been a Champions League final today, the front three would have been Diaz, Mane and Salah. I think he's just able to rotate, and he felt with the circumstances, and by the way, Jota's a damn good player and gets his quota of goals, that was the best way to go. Of course, he had to make the changes to try and get Diaz to take the ball in, to put Foyt under a bit of pressure, and to start running at that back four. The one worrying thing out of a couple of big games I've played recently was the press from Villarreal they didn't handle very well. The high-pressing game at the Etihad against Man City in the first half, they didn't handle it very well at all, Liverpool. They got a result, but didn't handle it very well. And I'm kind of thinking from their perspective that Real Madrid, for sure, would be a better suitor for them in the final. A different dynamic. They're not going to press you the same. They're not going to harass you the same. But they are going to come at you in a different way. But recently, when two teams in big games have pressed Liverpool early, they've really struggled in the first 45 minutes, or certainly in the City game, in the first half an hour.
And they might feel like they've got a score to settle if it is Real Madrid in
the
final.
Well, Mo Salah said that after the game. He was interviewed by our colleagues at BT Sport. And nobody had said, all the players had said, oh, I'm not bothered, oh, we'll take anybody. But then Mo Salah came out and he says, actually, I want to play Madrid. And I don't know if it's because City, he thinks City are a better team. And also, redemption for the final a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the quadruple odds are all still on. That is Jurgen Klopp making it to the League Cup final, the FA Cup final, and now the Champions League final. Will a comeback like that today, Don, help them in that plight?
I don't think so, Kay. I just think what it showed to the world and it showed to everyone is that Liverpool have got quality, but also they've got a big heart and they've got loads of bottle. This is the furthest anyone's ever been in terms of the quadruple. So they are breaking records all over the place. I think they'll beat Chelsea in the final. I think they'll add the FA Cup. The league's the hard one, obviously being a point behind City, because both teams are that good. They could win every single game. As Craig said, I think if you asked Jurgen Klopp, not on the microphone because he wouldn't give you an honest answer, and I think if you asked Liverpool fans, Liverpool players, who they want in the final, it would be Real Madrid, because there's nothing between City and Liverpool. The margins are so narrow, where I'd fancy Liverpool playing against Madrid. But as I said, they've got bottle and they've got heart, they've got quality, they've got options. That was the real Liverpool in the second half. There was a point, as Ali said there, where Villarreal was strong. But even Unai Emery, I think he would have said after the game, there's one or two players like Gerard Moreno who were carrying injuries. And there was one or two others that just couldn't last the 90 minutes. So, yes, it'll give them a wake-up call. I don't think it'll affect the Premier League. They go into a game against Tottenham, he'll play his strongest side. And I expect Liverpool to go marching on.
Frank?
Yeah, I wanted to go with the guys. And while Don was speaking, about the fact that maybe it's better to play Real Madrid, in the final instead of Man City, I'm thinking, yes, but that team won 13 times the Champions League. Don't they know how to win it? And they showed it against Chelsea, Paris Saint-Germain before, that they can play badly. And I mentioned it many times. I think Modric made an article saying that, yeah, we don't play well, but we have the spirit of winners and we're going to keep on working hard with that, which is a big tool. Comparing to Man City, which never won the Champions League, which lost against Chelsea last season. So when they're going to reach the final, if City reaches the final, they're going to think, okay, we never won. We're going to play against a team we won six times. There is a psychological spirit that you have to take in account when you play a final. It can be a World Cup final, it can be a Champions League final. And when you play Madrid, you would have a hard time to win because they know how to win the last game. And that's what it is. You don't play a final, you don't play well, you just win it or you lose it.
Ali, who do you think Liverpool would prefer in the final?
I imagine that they would prefer Real Madrid because of all the reasons I've already been mentioned. I think Liverpool can play a game at a different pace than Real Madrid can. And I think one of the things that Real Madrid fears is speed, because they don't have speed themselves, certainly through the midfield and certainly in the back line as well. But look at potential matchups. If indeed was Real Madrid that they were playing, okay, Trent Alexander-Arnold doesn't defend, and doesn't defend very well at all. We saw that today again. Vinicius, looking at Trent Alexander-Arnold, 1v1 over distance, I'm saying if I'm Real Madrid, I like that. And the way that Karim Benzema is playing right now, I like him against whoever he's playing against. So there are certain matchups that Real Madrid would want, but I think on the whole, Liverpool would probably prefer to play against Real Madrid, given the fact that they have a big edge on speed and athleticism.
All right, Don, percentage chance they win the quadruple?
Oh, my days. I'm just sticking with what I've been saying for ages. 51-49. It's too tight. It's too hard to call.
Quadruple. There's so much talk about it. There's so much made of it. It's definitely within their sights. They're capable of doing this, aren't they?
Oh, they're capable of doing it, but what's the old saying? You've got to be in it to win it. And they are. Look, they didn't think they were going to be in a Premier League title race because City at one point were a long way ahead. But Liverpool hit great form and City stumbled a couple of times. That let them back in it. The other competitions, I think they're always capable. I mean, it's the third final now in 5 years in the Champions League, which is quite an incredible feat. It can be done. I still think the Premier League got Tottenham at the weekend. It's in. The ball is still in Man City's court. So the odds are against them, but it would be an incredible achievement. I just think somewhere, one of those, I don't know which one, that they'll just fall short of.
Yeah, there's a lot more talk about the Premier League title race and the Champions League over on our YouTube page. Be sure to subscribe to always stay up to date. And another final that Liverpool are in is the FA Cup final, as mentioned. That will be against Chelsea at Wembley on Saturday, May 14th. You can see it right here on ESPN+.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One semi-final down, one to go, and it's Real Madrid against Manchester City on Wednesday. Manchester City coming into this one as favourites, leading the tie 4-3 on aggregate. Lots of talk about this. In fact, it's pretty much all the talk in the Spanish press. Ancelotti has a plan, say Diario AS, and then they headline and underscore what that plan actually is. Now let's talk about this tie coming up tomorrow, because what a first leg it was. What are we expecting to see from Real Madrid then, Ale, in this second leg? Because we do know one thing, they believe they can turn it around.
And they have every reason to believe, because they just won the league. They're feeling good about themselves. I'm sure confidence is very high. And then they watch the tape from the first leg and they see how exposed they were against Manchester City. And I suppose that they lean on the fact that they must tell themselves, and Ancelotti must be thinking, we couldn't possibly be as bad as we were defensively. We were so passive, allowing Manchester City to get a hold of the ball. And instead of putting pressure on the ball, we were just backing off Manchester City, and they were just picking out pass after pass after pass, chance after chance after chance. So the way that you spin it is, we can't be that bad. And the fact that Casemiro comes back in, that's big news for Real Madrid, not just because of what Casemiro does defensively, but he frees Toni Kroos to do what he likes to do best through the midfield, and that's be able to distribute play and control the pace of the game. So those things are positive for Real Madrid. And of course, Vinicius and Benzema, those things are players that you're going to have to rely upon to score the big goals. Okay, those are all the good news. The bad news is, you should have lost the first leg by 8. That's how many chances Manchester City had. They could have scored easily, and this is not an exaggeration. They could have scored easily in terms of quality chances, 8 goals. And so even if you play better, can you make up the difference to where now you close the gap to Manchester City? That's going to be a huge question. If Manchester City plays well, they should advance. If they don't, and they allow the heart and the head and the minds and the souls of the Bernabeu to push Real Madrid forward, then Manchester City will get themselves into trouble.
Frank, why are you laughing?
Well, because I think they've been that bad, you know, against Chelsea and also against Paris Saint-Germain in the first leg. Chelsea was in the second leg. So if they watch too many tapes, you know, they can wonder how come they can be in the semi-final. And the answer is the spirit that they have, how they can manage to reverse a situation where it seems to be impossible to do so. They believe in themselves. They're quite lucky, and luck is part of the game. And they have to believe that they can do something. I'm laughing because it's quite impossible to see Real Madrid winning that Champions League, but they showed the two first round, the two round, precedent round, that they're capable of getting a miracle from there. So it's possible from there to from them to do so. And from City, yeah, they can play well. Yeah, they can do so. But suddenly, after 40 minutes or maybe an hour, they go back to a rhythm where I don't like to see them, and they can be punished. I didn't enjoy the first leg. I have to say to you, as a defender, I didn't enjoy. As a football fan, yes, I did. But defensively, that was horrendous what I saw from Madrid and after what I saw from Manchester City. So I didn't enjoy that game.
Who's under more pressure? Man City are favourites, Real Madrid are at home.
City. Boys were mentioning earlier, haven't been over the line in this competition, have had some great opportunities. I don't think anybody at Madrid, although they want to win this competition every year, they've had great success in it. At the start of the season, it was fighting fires. Excuse me. So I think City are under more pressure. They haven't wrapped up the league. Real Madrid have. He's won it at Barcelona, in some style, by the way. Didn't at Bayern Munich. Hasn't yet at Man City. So all eyes are really on... the knives are out if he stuffs up again. Put it that way. Now, he's not going to lose his job. Of course he's not. But there'll be a few out there wanting to take a pop at him. If his City side, who are a much better squad than Real Madrid, who have, you know, I think in the, as a whole, better players and a better coach, in my opinion, the eyes are on them. Now, at the start, he said Ancelotti has a plan. What's the plan? To play 4-3-3, that's generally what they do. To not play as bad as they did in the first leg, obviously, or the first half in particular. But look, let's look at the little nuances. Stones, we think, is out. Ali mentioned Vinicius Jr. It's imperative, I think, that Kyle Walker is fit. Right? Now, we understand it might be a late fitness test.
He's trained and travelled.
Yeah. So, if he's not, they're going to be lumping balls over the top down that side for Vinicius Jr. And Kinsella's going to be under pressure. So, I think it's imperative that somehow they manage to get, if he's fit, on the field, Kyle Walker. If he's not fit and they play this ridiculously high line again with Laporte and Stones, if Modric and Kroos get on the ball, they'll just pop it in behind for Benzema and Vinicius and runners. And that's a problem for Man City. Even when they're in control of a game, Kay, sometimes against lesser teams in the Premier League, you think, my God, why are they taking these chances? And a lot of the times they get away with it, but they're not going to get away with basic elementary errors against this Real Madrid side. So it's about getting the balance right between squeezing the game and dropping off, and somebody's going to have to deal with Vinicius Jr. Otherwise, it could go pear-shaped for them.
Do you agree that City are under more pressure, Don?
Yeah, Pep has to win it. I don't think he has to win it. I just mean everyone in general. I think they love to see someone like Pep fail. And just going back to Ali, I mean, that's the reason why Ali should never, ever, ever be a manager. If he's going to show the Real Madrid players the first half of that game against Man City, because you should just bury that half. You should never want to see that half ever again, because it will demoralise the players. So, Ali, never step into management. It's not your bag. It's not for you.
Okay. All right. Fine. So, I just turn a blind eye and ignore it.
Yes.
It didn't happen, guys. We didn't give up a bunch of chances.
Yes. I don't want to see that
happen at all.
No, I don't want to see
it. Hey, just because you don't like scary movies doesn't mean you don't get to watch your own games.
Hey, Don, why doesn't Ancelotti show them the whole 90 minutes from Paris?
there you go.
That was even worse. But just go back to Frank's point. It's amazing. They've been battered and bruised and down and out, and somehow they've found a way. Even at home in the second leg against Chelsea, after such a good performance at Stamford Bridge. And then, again, from the Etihad, you go away 4-3, you think, oh, that was a great game. And it was entertaining, but it was one-way traffic for a lot of it. So this team, yeah, they're not the, by any stretch of the imagination, Kay, the most fluent, exciting and best Real Madrid side we've seen. But boy, they're dogged. And they've got moments of brilliance in them that have taken them this far.
But all of you guys agree that Manchester City will progress.
On that point, yeah.
Everybody in their predictions has gone for Man City progressing, although Ale has got it at a draw on the night, but obviously the aggregate score would see Pep Guardiola's men go on to the final. It is a final that we will be discussing on tomorrow's show, ESPN FC, as we look back on that massive game between Man City and Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. Join us to break it all down. Taking a look at La Liga standings, Real Madrid already champions, and they will be taking that into this second leg tie against Manchester City. A bit of a boost for them. Barcelona second behind them. Sevilla and Atleti still remaining in the top four spots right now after Betis didn't manage to take all full points in their game on Monday. Got some work to do. Atletico Madrid, though, on giving a guard of honour to Real Madrid. It is the team they face next at the Wanda Metropolitano. And they say some people want to turn what began as a gesture of recognition for the champions into a public toll that their rivals must pay, imbued with a scent of humiliation. Atletico Madrid will under no circumstances collaborate in this attempt at ridicule in which the true values of sport are completely forgotten and tension and confrontation between fans are incited. Alexis Nunes caught up with Stefan Savic to talk more about this very topic.
Normally, I don't understand why the people are speaking so much about that. There is more important thing. There are more important things to think about it and to speak. But the club said, "What is the opinion and what are we going to do?" And I'm totally according to the statement of the club.
Well, well, well. Is it a big deal or isn't it a big deal?
Holy smokes. The only thing humiliating has been most of the Atleti's performances this year, to be honest with you. I can't be diddled with this guard of honour in any country, in any league. Biggest waste of time ever. Real Madrid have won the league, and deservedly so, by some distance. But as opponents, we don't have to stand there and applaud them for doing so. It's their job. So, no, I know it might be tradition in Spain or whatever, I don't care. But, no, I wouldn't be wanting to entertain this myself if I was a player.
Frank, what do you think about this topic and whether a guard of honour should be given by Atleti to Real Madrid?
It's a complete nonsense. I will go with Craig, with Savic and with the Atleti statement, where I think it's completely useless. It's kind of a shame, you know, to be there and clap the other team, which you don't care. You envy them, you know, you don't want to be there. I'm so happy I didn't have to do that during my career. I think I would have denied it. I wouldn't have shown up. I think it's a waste of time, to not say worse. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. And when you have a rivalry between two big clubs like Atleti and Real Madrid, no, you don't do that, because it's not fair for the Atleti fan in that circumstances.
Frank, it was your compatriot Zinedine Zidane who said that Barcelona broke the tradition. He refused to give them one because he said that Barcelona didn't give Real Madrid one for winning the Club World Cup. Ali, what do you think about the Pasillo?
Look, this is professional sports. This is not orange slices and juice boxes for the kids. So if a team wants to do it and they want to honor the champion, then so be it. Go ahead and do it. But if you don't want to and you don't feel like you have any sort of responsibility to do this, hey, it's a personal choice. Move away. And guess what? Real Madrid, go celebrate your title with your fans at Santiago Bernabeu. Don't come and celebrate here in the Wanda Metropolitano and then expect us to clap for you. Are you kidding me again? This is not orange slices. These are not juice boxes. This is not amateur sports. This is professional sports, and we're here to compete. We're not here to applaud you.
Oh, but Don, it's tradition.
I know. See, under normal circumstances, Kay, I would be like, do a guard of honour. Show a little bit of class. But this is Atletico Madrid. They're horrible. Simeone's horrible. You know, they're fighting for their lives for a Champions League spot. They don't want to be clapping Real Madrid on and it's a sort of testimonial game. They've got to get fired up to try and win the game. So if they can make it horrible, if they can make the atmosphere hostile and that just gives them a little edge over Real Madrid, so be it. You've got to look after yourself.
Well, they've got a reputation to uphold, Atleti, haven't they? They're horrible on the pitch. Can't be doing that. Oh, wasn't it lovely how they just gave them a guard of honour and all fans cheered and applauded. It's been such a terrible season for us, but aren't they great? I mean, this is not 2020. This is not the 2022 we know, is it? People have got to be nice to each other. Everybody wakes up being offended these days. No, I mean, I don't know. Let's just move on. I don't know what's going to happen. But I know if it was me, I'd be like, Frank, if my manager says, you got to do it, I think I'd have a hamstring problem that day. Well, I'm not playing. I'm not going out there doing that.
Maybe a back spasm.
Well, back spasm, I won't be able to get out of my house and go and join the celebrations.
Dan Thomas and I were at the Santiago Bernabeu when Barcelona gave Real Madrid one in 2008. But it does seem as though those two teams have stopped it as well. Even Valverde wasn't upset with Zidane not
getting
one. Yes. That's how it's looking. We'll find out anyway, won't we? At the Wanda Metropolitano when Atleti take on Real Madrid this weekend. Real Madrid don't need to worry too much about this game. Atleti need to ensure that they finish in the top four. So it's going to be an interesting one to see. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. There was a big makeup game in the Championship, a direct fight for automatic promotion between these two sides, Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest. Let's get you all the action from this one. We'll start early. Minute 19, it would be Jed Spence sending the through ball through to Sam Surridge. He's one-on-one, hits the post.
Yeah, Surridge, who was a young player at Bournemouth, was getting a bit of booing from the crowd. Great ball through. This was the first real chance for Forrest on the break. And, yeah, I think he should have done better there.
Late on, set piece this came from. Kiefer Moore with the only goal of the game.
Yeah, brilliant set piece, but you've got to be... Some would have walked off the training ground, but as a Forrest player, you have to be aware of that. But that was the deal for Bournemouth. That's them promoted. And you can see the celebrations down in the south coast.
Yeah, Forest needed to avoid defeat, but that is Bournemouth up because of that result. Securing promotion back to the Premier League. Forest will take the playoff route, though, where, as you mentioned, Craig, before on the show, when you look at how they started the season, that really is still a big reward for them.
Where they're sitting now would have been a pipe dream. When Chris Hughton got sacked after a couple of months, they'd lost like six or seven games. So... they have come up on the rails incredibly. Bournemouth, to their credit, have been up there with Fulham most of the season. They've been really steady. Forrest have put a run of results together. They lost a couple of weeks ago against Luton, who are also in the playoffs. But prior to that, they hadn't lost since they were away at Cardiff in January. So it's been an amazing run from Stevie Cooper and his side. They're going to go in this bun fight of the playoffs. Who knows what's going to happen when you go into that. But they needed to get this victory today. They could have had a couple of goals in the first half. They didn't dominate the game, but they created the better chances in the first half. We saw the one off the crossbar. There was two or three other chances. Bournemouth didn't really create much early on. You could feel the nervousness of the expectation and what was round the corner for them. A win, and it was done. But congratulations to them. But for Forrest, it's about garnishing all that momentum they've had since around September, October, and taking that into the playoffs. Don't forget, this is a club that have not only won and been the best team in England, but they were the best team in Europe many, many years ago. And they've been over 20 years in the second tier. It's been a long time for them suffering.
Yeah, a lot of heritage, a lot of history. Yeah. As you say, two-time European Cup winners back-to-back in 79 and 1980. What an achievement it would be to get back up after so long away. As for Bournemouth, though...
And it's a mile from my house in Northampton.
Yeah, and so you've got... your family, big Forest fans.
Yeah, my son and my grandson go all the time. But yeah, it's a great club, but it's been down in the doldrums for a while. But as for Bournemouth, they know what the Premier League's all about. Of course, Scott Parker, the manager, was relegated with Fulham, who have gone back up also, but he left there to take the Bournemouth job. Look, they're a tidy little side. They play some nice football. But it all boils down to one thing when you move up to the Premier League, Kay. Money. You've got to spend money. You've got to improve your squad. Because the Championship's a good standard, but the Premier League's a different ballgame altogether. So it's going to come down to budgets for these managers. And if you don't spend, and a lot of these managers that come up, they end up getting the sack. Because they do such a great job, they get up, and then it is so difficult, and they don't spend much, their board doesn't spend much. Like Norwich City, who hardly spent a bean, sacked Daniel Farke, and then Dean Smith came in, he's not really been able to do too much, and all of a sudden... you go from a great manager to 6 months later being a terrible manager in the board's mind. So it's a really tricky situation to be in, to balance the books between spending to improve and stay up and obviously not putting yourself in financial difficulties. But for the management, it's a real difficult scenario coming up to the Premier League.
It's all right. Norwich will bounce back up.
Not well, they've been criticised for that by in one or two quarters, but that's the way that they run their business.
Yeah, it certainly is. Well, Craig will be part of the latest edition of Extra Time alongside Frank and Don. You must subscribe to YouTube to see what memory Craig brings up that gets Frank laughing until he's crying. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The Seattle Sounders are hoping to make history tomorrow night in the CONCACAF Champions League final second leg against Pumas, and they are heavy favourites to do so as well, as we now welcome in Ali Moreno to look ahead to this game. And they are expecting a record attendance in this competition, Ali. 60,000 plus tickets already being sold. What type of atmosphere do you think we're going to be seeing there?
It's going to be electric. From the moment that Seattle tied that game 2-2 at Pumas last week, the excitement has been building in Seattle, and there's been all sorts of marketing going on and all sorts of promotion going on for this game, because I think the fans in Seattle recognize the importance of this moment. And so we have seen all sorts of people out there putting the word out. Make sure you come out, support the Seattle Sounders, because as you just said, Kay, it could very well be a historic night, not only for the Seattle Sounders, but in the bigger picture for Major League Soccer.
Absolutely. And with that in mind, what are you actually expecting to see, LA, from Seattle in this match?
What's really interesting about the rhetoric coming into this match is how Seattle are the favorites, that this is indeed the best chance for MLS to finally win CONCACAF Champions League. Now, the truth of the matter is this is the latest best chance for MLS to win this competition. Over the last few seasons, there's been a couple of moments in which MLS thought they were gonna take that step, and here it is, Seattle at home, over 60,000 people. And I think the most important part about this game and about the Seattle Sounders is the fact that for moments, away to Pumas last week, they were better than Pumas. For moments, they were able to maintain possession. They were able to generate some opportunities. They had a couple of mistakes defensively, but on the whole, the 2-2 draw is deserved for the Seattle Sounders. So you have to imagine, logic would tell you that coming home with this support, that then all that possession that you had and all that ability to create chances here and there, that that's going to be better for the Seattle Sounders, that they're going to be more comfortable and that they're going to feel the energy behind them. The Seattle Sounders should be the favorites coming into this match, but it's always tricky when you play against a Mexican team. Now, here's the thing. This is not the best Mexican team. Pumas are currently 11th out of 18 teams in Liga MX. So if there was ever a chance for an MLS team to win it, this is it. This is the moment. And if I'm Seattle Sounders and Brian Schmetzer and the players and the coaches and everybody and the fans, I'm embracing this pressure and I'm saying, you know what? It is our time. It is our time to deliver for ourselves. It is our time to deliver for Major League Soccer and just focus on the task at hand. Don't make it any bigger than it needs to be. It's already big enough. Focus on the task at hand, play your game, and you should be competitive enough to the point to where you can beat Pumas at home.
All right, so with that in mind, what is your prediction, Ali? Because we know historically this has not gone the way of MLS sides.
No, it hasn't. So the easy choice would be to say Pumas. Again, Liga MX, but I'm not picking the easy choice. MLS, baby, you know it and you love it. It is important for Liga MX. Even the dogs are getting excited. They believe in MLS. I believe in MLS and the Seattle Sounders. They're going to get it done.
There you go, the approval of Ale's dogs as well. Make sure you join the boys on Football Americas tomorrow. Oh, actually, they've been looking ahead to this one and the latest one, which has dropped on Monday as well. New episodes are streaming weekly on ESPN+.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Thomas Muller has extended his contract at Bayern until 2024. He joined the club at age 10. There's been over 600 competitive appearances in that time since his first team debut in 2008. He joined the academy in 2000, and he's just scooped his 11th Bundesliga winner's medal. He should be back in action at the weekend against Stuttgart. You can catch all those Bundesliga games you can see on your screen right here on ESPN+. And the latest update of a meet with Zlatan Ibrahimovic and the Gabba Jules podcast has just dropped. Make sure to download that wherever you do get your podcasts. But that's all from us on the latest edition of the show. Do stick around, though, because the boys will be back to answer your questions. We've got some good ones as well. See you then. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Frank Leboeuf and Don Hutchison are with us. Craig Burley's here. Don's already nodding and dancing away to the music. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any percentage questions either, Don, so you can be happy tonight.
You know what? People are not
relax.
People are not asking him now because he's mastered it.
Exactly.
Mastered it. Yeah.
Nailed it. Jesus.
Yeah, that's what he should probably just keep doing, yeah? And they'll stop asking altogether, Don. All right, for all. Oh, we'll actually come to Don and Craig on this. For all, what did Klopp do or say to the players at halftime? Did you guys ever feature in a game like tonight where it really was a tale of two halves? Craig.
Well, I'll let Don answer the
All right. So, Don, tell us then what Jurgen Klopp did at halftime.
I'll tell you what he done, Kay. I played in a game at Burnham Park against Bolton in the FA Cup for Liverpool, and quite naughty, Bolton turned the undersoil heating off, so the place was like an ice rink. It was dangerous, it was horrible. It was literally ice and snow. It was terrible how the game was allowed on. And we found ourselves 2-0 down at half-time, and Graeme Souness was the manager, and he come in and he went ballistic. He knocked the teapots over, he knocked Luxe bottles everywhere, he was picking the little China cups up and he was smashing it over everyone's head, reminding us who we were playing for, and this is little old Bolton, and we are Liverpool, and you're playing for the fans, you're playing for the badge, you're playing for the history. And we turned it around in the second half, and somehow, we managed to get a draw out of the game. So that's probably exactly what Jurgen Klopp reminded these players at halftime. Think about the badge, think about Liverpool.
So we talked in the show about what he did do.
Yeah, so for those people that didn't watch the show, and I don't know who that is, but, you know, he came out with a great line in an interview after the game when he says, it was so obvious how bad we were in every facet of a game, passing, defending, second balls, that I turned to the analysts who are working stuff on the iPads and everything and said, find me a good passage of play so that I can show the players at halftime this is what I want. And the analysts came back and said, there isn't any.
So if that's the case, what does he then...
Not one.
How does he say that to his players then? Does he just tell them exactly that and then that should be enough for them to go out and...
Well, he might have used that as a sort of segue to his team talk, but I think he would have just said to them, amongst other things, look, sometimes it's about fight as well, it's about the second ball, it's about defending, trusting yourself, play the football that we know we can play, which is what he said in his interview, and start controlling the tempo of the game. They just didn't control the tempo of the game, they got harassed into making mistakes, and they didn't defend well, but yeah, I sort of get this picture of these analysts, you know, just scurrying through quickly this 45 minutes and find
I just got a little insight to you as a manager there as well.
What?
Just keep, well, I think he should have done this, this. Maybe management could have been for
well,
you.
Well, I think he would. I think there was also a few backsides were probably kicked along the way as well. Maybe there wasn't. Maybe he was calm and composed. I would imagine there'd been a few voices raised in that dressing room, even between the players. Sometimes it's not the manager. Sometimes it's the players pointing fingers at each other and you know, just trying to get a reaction. So yeah, it'd have been an interesting dressing room to be in. We've all been in one like that.
Frank, have you been in one like that at half time where you get your backside kicked?
Yes, once I think I was in Strasbourg and half time I think we were losing 3-0 or 2-0 and we were really, really horrible. And the coach said, you know what, I picked the team, I have my responsibility for that. But the 11 players who are on the field, we are very much invisible, are going to finish the game. I'm not substituting anybody. You're going to finish the game and you're going to have the shame for yourself.
Nice.
I'm not going to help you out and any substitute won't help you. You're going to suffer till the end. Well, we lost, I think, 5-0 or 6-0.
I once witnessed and heard, I've had loads of arguments we all have in dressing rooms, but I heard a terrific one that I could not understand between, at Celtic, my old coach, Wim Jansen, who passed away a few months ago, a great Dutch player and coach, and our star striker, Henrik Larsson, who was Swedish. And Henrik was the golden boy, obviously, and Wim had brought him in, but he wasn't playing particularly well this day, and at half-time they were going at it, and this wasn't like Wim at all. Wim was a quiet guy, very composed, you know, very, always on a level pathway. He lost it, Henrik lost it, but of course the rest of us, apart from the sort of Scandinavians and the Dutch and the Swedes who could talk a bit of the lingo, we were all like that. What the hell are they talking about?
I loved it. It was the best you saw.
No, it was one of the best arguments I ever heard that I never understood. And I was like, after they finished, I turned to Reggie Blinker, the Dutch winger. I said, hey, Reggie. And Big Mark Reaper, the Dane. I said, what the hell were they saying? He said, well, he was swearing at him in Dutch and he was swearing back at him in Swedish so they couldn't understand. Oh, it was amazing. And the rest of us from the British Isles were all sat there going, this is brilliant, but we've got bloody no idea what they're saying. It's fantastic. It's slightly weird. Because normally when somebody's in an argument, you know exactly what it is.
Come on, Frank.
Okay, one day we play France against Azerbaijan, and it was for the qualification of the Euro 96. And we were leading, I think it was 1-0 or 2-0 against Azerbaijan, half time. And we came into the dressing room, and I never seen Aimé Jacquet like that, our national team coach. He got like crazy and they say, shame on you. How bad can you be? You know, I want to see it better. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be hammered tomorrow in the newspapers. I'm going to make sure you're going to be hammered. So show me that you deserve congratulations at the end of the game. He was so bad, so yelling at us. We won 10-0. It's still the record.
Wouldn't be allowed these.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be allowed these days.
I love seeing all those videos though.
Some player would, some of these modern players, they would go to somebody at their HR at the club, if clubs have HR.
Or the media.
And say, my manager shouted at me. I'm very upset. It still happens. You got to accept it.
I want to leave. I don't want to leave the club.
Yeah, I don't want to play again. The manager shouted at me, the big man, and he was in my face, and he was like, shouting at me, and I was very upset. No, you got to handle it. Got to get on with it. People, it happens. People get upset and angry.
Yep.
Some people fold under that pressure, and some people thrive under it.
There's some brilliant ones. If you are on YouTube watching us, then go check out iconic halftime talks. Lots of swearing. 0-1.
Oh, yeah.
Check that one out. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Don, is Luis Diaz the signing of the season already?
Yes. Yes. Absolute superstar. Reminds me a bit of Suarez. He's got a bit of nasty in him, I think. I think he demands the ball. He's brave. He's aggressive. You know, you see in the second half against Villarreal tonight, he demands the ball at his feet. He takes players on. He gets you further up the pitch. He's got an eye for a goal. He's brave. Scores all types of goals, headers, spectacular sort of volleys.
everything. I think, what a sign. What did it cost? Like 35, 40 million quid? I mean, what a find. What a steal.
40 mil.
Slotted in perfectly, hasn't he?
Yeah, and it's never easy. Particularly going to another big club with more expectation, foreign country, new teammates. I don't know what his grasp of English is. From what I've heard, it wasn't great when he came in, so that makes it even more difficult, the communication. And then just fitting in, you know, people forget that when players come to a new club, particularly during the season in the January transfer window, you're not only fitting into your team, you're in a hotel, you're looking for a place to live, you're literally living out of a suitcase for a bit. Now, it's not the end of the world, I know, but it's not ideal. It just adds to the problems, you know, try to make sure you get somewhere stable to live. I've got to get out of this hotel. Hotels are great for a week or two, and then it gets old very fast. So for him to come in and handle it the way he has been very impressive.
We've half answered the next one in the show, but I'm going to get you guys to elaborate. It is, who would Liverpool want to meet in the finals, City or Madrid? Frank.
Well, we talked about that. I think City, they don't want to play City because they know that, and Don mentioned that the difference between the two clubs is very narrow and it's going to be details. According to what we saw in the quarterfinal, well, in the last 16, in the quarterfinal and in the first leg of the semi, Madrid doesn't play well, can be absolutely horrible, but you have to consider that they have a fighting spirit and a mindset to win games. So, but overall, I would say Liverpool will pick Madrid to play in the final.
But does being familiar with City help them in a final?
Well, I was thinking back to the chat we had on this show before the league game at the Etihad, where Liverpool did get a draw. It was a draw that day, wasn't it? I think it was.
Yeah.
They came back.
Yeah.
2-2.
Yeah.
2-2 again.
Yeah, it was a draw. And I was looking at it beforehand, and you know, you talk about the familiarity, but Liverpool haven't beaten City since 2017. They've had the odd draw too, but they haven't beaten them since 2017. So City have just had their number, in that period. So I think they would prefer a slower-paced team who they know they can dominate. They're not going to dominate City. Might beat them, but they're not going to dominate them. But they would dominate Madrid, and I think that would give them a better chance.
So they'd rather Madrid, do you think so too, Don?
100%. I think if you go into a Champions League final against Man City, I mean, the contradiction to that is Liverpool beat them in the FA Cup semi, didn't they, quite comfortably in the first half. But I think in a Champions League final...
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me that, Don. I was going back to...
Before you meant in the league.
In the league. Before
you meant in the league.
I knew you meant that.
I forgot.
I think you toss a coin, Champions League final, you toss a coin and you go Man City, Liverpool, and you go like, ah, bam. I think if you go Liverpool, Real Madrid, Liverpool, in my humble opinion, even though Real Madrid have won it 6 million times, I think Liverpool go into a Champions League final playing Madrid favourites.
Also, he just gave us 100% instead of 49.51.
I'm still in the process of digging myself out of this hole. that was... not only was I talking about the league, it was Man City made a lot of... Now, this is factual. Man City made a lot of changes at Wembley. Left all the big hitters on the bench. Am I out? Am I done?
What an actor, what a politician.
He needs a bigger spade.
I bailed myself out.
The guy is an actor... / a politician / a talent. Fantastic.
Well, I'm saying that. I mean,
we
Archie Rim
games here at ESPN.
Archie K last
about
week.
The semi-final.
I mean, Archie last week shot me down in flames, Craig, last week, didn't he?
He did.
And the Eintracht West Ham game, and I went, oh, the atmosphere was amazing. And he went, it's terrible. Atmosphere was awful. I was like, I thought it was
to
decent.
To be fair though, Don, you were talking about atmospheres at grounds while you were sitting in that very room that you're in now. So,
mate, I had six games to keep an eye on. What games are watching? Chelsea.
Exactly.
Was there
Chelsea
a Liverpool
Man
win
U.
in 2019, Don, seeing as though you were the almanac on this?
Say again?
Was the Liverpool win in 2019 3-1?
Which game? I can't remember.
What? Was
Hello?
it? Who told you that?
Just thought I'd throw it out there.
Last time I looked,
I get a little voice in my head sometimes.
Before the Liverpool game at the Etihad, I looked at the head-to-head, and unless my eyes were deceiving me, and there's every chance with my $4 reading glasses, I thought Liverpool's last win was in 2017. Prior to that, historic win in the FA Cup semi-final.
2019 is what I'm getting told.
Okay, all right.
Well, I was having a shocker.
To be fair, Don, you tried to deflect that one, though, because you didn't remember, did you?
Oh, I can't remember what... Kay, I had a baby 2 weeks ago. I can't remember what happened last month.
All right. Frank.
Oh, who is 19, the... 2017.
I know. Frank, who is the calmest teammate you ever played with? They never panicked under pressure. They never really made mistakes.
I would say Marcel Desailly most of the time, and I will add Emmanuel Petit as well. And for a different reason, I will add Torre André Flo, because the guy seems to believe in another planet. You know, even for forgetting his stats before coming to Stamford Bridge. So those three guys, I never felt any pressure, you know, touching their skins, you know, before a game. And they were always spot on when they had to play.
Well, I'll throw another one in there who was also a teammate of Frank's and myself's. Ruud Gullit. Ruud Gullit he was so big and strong, Frank, and quick and talented. It just nothing seemed to fluster him, whether he played at the back, which he did on occasions, whether he played in midfield, which he did on occasions, or whether he played as a striker, where he had his major success in Italy. But he just never panicked, did he?
Now, that was amazing, but I think you can add Rijkaard with him when he played at Milan together. I had a chance to talk to both of them, and they say that they felt so strong. In 88, when they won the European Championship, and Ruud Gullit scored a goal in the final, they said that they were sure that they would win because they were too strong, and they felt very much superior, with all due respect, but with all knowing the strength that they had. And Ruud, when I played with him, I remember playing an FA Cup game at the back with him in the first season I was there. Well, he was teasing the striker, but not with the talking, not with the trash talking, just with trying nutmegs in our own 16-yard box. I mean, that was crazy. That was crazy. So easy, smiling, and he was calling me lovely boy. You know, everything was easy for him. I mean, he was a special guy.
He used to call in the morning. He would, everybody would be lovely boy. Morning, lovely boy. Morning. But it was quite surreal because he was a player with us for a year and then he became a player manager. But it was quite surreal because normally a manager, you'll call him usually sometimes by his name, but more often than not, you'll call him boss or gaffer. Right, however, on this occasion, he went by the name of Big Nose. And I've heard what... Now, I haven't heard many managers being called that by players, but Dennis Wise used to say... Dennis Wise used to come in the morning and say, "Morning, Big Nose." That's the manager.
Wow.
And he would say... "Morning, lovely boy. Morning, Big Nose."
Wow.
Can you imagine a new player?
Frank! Bring back memories, Frank.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I never had the guts to call him Big Nose, but that's absolutely true.
No.
Absolutely true with Dennis Wise, calling him Big Nose, that's for sure, but I never did that.
This could be a one and only time that a manager has come in and his captain names him every morning as Big Nose. And he goes back and says, "Good morning." He doesn't say, "Come to my office, don't talk to me like that in front of the players. The players will disrespect me." No, every morning.
"Good morning, lovely boy."
"Good morning, lovely boy." "Morning, Big Nose." That was fantastic.
Wow.
Told us on, but it's just everybody's different.
I mean, Don, you can't beat that, surely.
Nah, I can't beat that. I mean, the only other one I'd throw in was someone like Jan Molby. And Jan was just, he was just calm, placid. Jan was Jan. Never
never hurried up for anyone.
And he didn't have a big nose.
No, exactly. He never hurried up for anyone, but what a player.
Thanks. Thanks so much from the lovely boys today, from Craig, Frank and Don. Thanks for your questions as well. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all over again. Bye-bye. Join us every single day. Big one tomorrow. Manchester City taking on Real Madrid.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.